welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Wesley Mission Victoria and broadcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, the life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves, and welcome to another story in the wonderful series of Listen to Older Voices. In this program, I present part one of a three-part program featuring the inspirational John Steen. John starts his story from the age of 18 months of age, when he contracted polio, a much misunderstood ailment in the early 1950s, with very poor, even crude treatment. He recalls in vivid detail the effect upon his parents and the effect upon himself, including being in quarantine in the Hamilton Hospital and not seeing his parents for 18 months. John's story of growing up includes some great stories involving grandparents and the role his grandfather played in building the original Rye Hotel on Melbourne's southeastern peninsula. Despite major setbacks from contracting polio, including some horrific experiences at school, John eventually gains an apprenticeship. So let's get involved in John's story from the beginning. John, can I start by asking you when you were born and where you were born?
I was born in Portland, Victoria, in 1950.
What's your earliest memories?
My earliest memories would be around about 1952, when I was 18 months old and I got polio.
Oh, okay. And you actually remember contracting that?
I actually remember that night. The night that I got polio, my mother said the next morning, she said that I'd had a terrible nightmare and a really rough night. The next morning she got me up, stood me on the kitchen table to give me a wash, and I just collapsed.
Goodness.
And then I was diagnosed with having polio. So that's my earliest memory, is the night I got polio.
Well, I'd like to follow that up in a few minutes and talk about how that affected you in your early life. But while we're mentioning Mum, what can you recall about Mum and Dad? What was Mum like, for instance?
Well, Mum was beautiful. She was a very beautiful young lady. There was nearly 20 years difference between Mum and my father in age.
Right.
Dad had come back from the Second World War and he was back about a year. And he met my mum in Portland, and Mum got married, and Mum and Dad got married, and then the story begins.
Mm. What about Dad? What was he like?
He was a fantastic guy, Dad. He's a very quiet man. He was the hardest worker, I've never seen a man work so hard, and I've been around, but he was an engine driver in the Queensland Railways. And then he moved to Portland, where he worked at the Portland Abattoirs as a stationary engine driver. And I think he went away to war and then came back to the same job, because he was there for 38 years. And that's a long time to have a job. But Dad, not only did he do his shift work at the abattoirs, but he had an old army blitz truck, and it was a four-wheel drive, 7 yards, and he had a shell grit mill. Living on the coast of Portland, there's a beach there called Shelley Beach, and Dad used to drive this old army blitz down the sand dunes, down, and he, I think it was a number 9 shovel, he used to shovel that truck by hand.
By hand.
7 yards. And I used to be playing around the sand dunes in the surf, and Dad would just keep shoveling away. And it was the only truck, because it was an army vehicle, was four-wheel drive, it was the only one that could actually get up the cliffside in the sand, and many a time he had to tow tourists up because they could never get back up. But Dad, I never really got to know Dad real well until I got into my 20s, when he and I became real good buddies. And some of the things that he told me about the war, about his life and what had happened to him over the years, it was really interesting.
That's really, I mean, you're actually very fortunate, because that's very unusual. I don't think I've met many people who in their 20s developed a relationship like that with their father. They either had it from the early years or never had it at all. So that's pretty unusual to do that.
Well, I suppose it is, but mind you, I never got to spend very much time with my parents when I was younger, because after contracting polio, I was put into quarantine in Hamilton Hospital, and I never saw my parents for about 18 months.
And, Good Lord. From 18 months of age, you caught polio, didn't you? You
said that's that right. Age. Yeah. And I never got to see my parents until I was about 3.
Gosh.
Because the vaccine wasn't invented
that's
then.
That's right.
The vaccine didn't come out until 1955. And the only way Mum and Dad could actually see me was they were allowed to look through a little window in the door of the ward, and I didn't even know they were there. And I was in with all the other kids, adults. I can remember talking to people in iron lungs, and the whole ward was just dedicated to polio survivors.
Did you understand what was happening at that age, or did that understanding come later in life?
It came later in life.
Yeah, because at 18 months, you wouldn't have really had much understanding of why this was happening.
No.
It must have been very distressing for Mum and Dad. Not having contact with a young child.
It really upset my father. It upset my father, and, well, from what I can remember, it would have upset my mum as well.
Mm.
But I can remember coming home, and I can remember I walked to the kitchen table, and the kitchen table was up to my chest, and that's how far I'd grown. I'd grown from that, like a toddler, up. That was a big surprise to me. And by that time I was in calipers, and I used to walk stiffly,
of course.
And I stayed like that for quite a few years.
And this is Listen to Older Voices, Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio.
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
Yes, I've got an older brother and a younger sister. My brother Les, he's 2 years older than me, and my sister is 10 years younger than me.
Okay, so your sister certainly wasn't around when this was happening, but your older brother would have been. Did that affect your relationship growing up, being away from him for that period of time, or did it just develop anyway?
Oh, I never really thought too much about my brother, actually. Mm. My memories of my brother those days was he was just around. I could never do anything with him.
Of course.
I could never kick a football. I could never play cricket. And I mean, we lived in the country, and I was always the one who was saying, wait for me, because they'd be off into the prickles and everything, and I'd be the one with the stiff legs, and we'd be rabbiting and things like that.
Because that's what country kids did. They always went walking and exploring, didn't they?
That's right.
You went fairly great distances because it was the country, and yet you were very much tied to the family farm, basically.
Yes. We would go miles and miles, and living on the coast, we had cliff tops to play on, and I can remember Mum belting the hell out of us once she caught us over at the cliffs. Well, we never thought it was dangerous, and that, but Yes, I never had a lot to do with my eldest brother in regards to younger life.
Mm.
Now we've got a much better relationship now than we've ever had, but we are getting on.
Yes, we all are. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about your school experiences in a minute, but before I do that, before we started the interview, you were talking about your grandparents and the fact that they are actually in historical books. Can you give us some idea of the history of your grandparents and why they were so important to Portland?
Ah, right. Now, on my father's side, Dad's grandfather came out from Denmark before the First World War.
Okay.
Now, he came out to a place called Katanning in Perth. And then he married my great-grandmother, who was French, and they actually moved from Katanning to Toowoomba in Queensland, where they were wheat farmers and sugarcane farmers and peanut farmers and all that sort of farming that they do up there. That was my great-grandfather. And my grandfather, he was a light horseman. And Now, he actually, dare I say it, but he got Grandma pregnant out of wedlock. And
which was a big thing in those days.
back in between the First and Second World War, yes. Then my father came along. He's the eldest of eight boys and two sisters. And there's quite a history, as far as I know, about the steams in Katanning and being a light horseman.
Mm.
And we're actually related to the Amps. Now, the Amps, they came from Holland about the same time. And there's one of my relatives has published a book, and it's called The Book of Amps. And it's got the whole family tree in the book. I'm even in the book as well with my brother and my sister. So they were our pioneers.
Right.
When it come to, they brought these skills from like Denmark and Europe, and they contributed to our lifestyle nowadays.
Mm. Mm.
My mother's side, my grandfather, he came out from Scotland and he was already married to my grandmother, and this is before the Second World War, and they came from Scotland to Rye in Victoria, and they let them off at the Rye Pier, and my grandfather and grandmother walked along the beach. And he got sick and tired of walking, and he just dropped his bags, and he said to my great-grandmother, mind you, he said to her, "That's where we're building the house." And apparently the house is still there.
Good Lord.
Now, I've been down to Sorrento, and he was a woodcutter. He used to cut timber for Melbourne, and he used to make lime, and apparently there's a memorial down there to him. He laid the foundations or built the hotel.
Right.
And I went down, and Grandfather Swan is his name, and I went down to the hotel, and they'd knocked the hotel down, but they kept the facade. And I've talked to the manager there or the owner there, and at some stage we're going to swap photos, because he's actually got photos of my grandfather laying the first brick for the Rye Hotel, and my grandmother was there. It was quite a big thing deal. Those days.
Yes.
And so we've done a deal. I've got photos of him and my great-grandfather and great-grandmother, and we're going to do a swap. And so we've both got sense.
Amazing stuff.
So this fellow, he said to me, he said, I don't know who these people are. And he took me into the foyer. And because I've got these photos here. Yeah,
immediately.
I said, now that's my grandfather and that's my grandmother. And he said to me, he said, you know that they've put out a book and it's called Sand, Fire and Lime. And apparently to get lime, you must burn it or something like that. And that was for the mortar, for bricks, you see. And I'm yet to track that down. I've got to get down to Ryle, Sorrento, to the RSL down there. And there's a historian down there who can tell me more about my family and that. But, I mean, there's a contribution.
Oh, absolutely.
Towards the foundations of Melbourne and that. And according to my grandmother, he loved to dance. And he had, it's strange enough, my father had 8 brothers and my grandfather on my mother's side, this is great-grandfather, he had 8 daughters.
Oh.
So they were big families.
Big families, big that's families. Right.
And Nana can tell me, he used to get them and he teach them how to waltz. And he got them to the stage that they could waltz up a staircase.
Good Lord.
And he'd put a door down on the staircase and teach them to waltz up the door and that. So I would have loved to have had more information about him, but apparently there's some monument down there. I've looked a few times and I haven't been able to find it.
But probably if you're going to make contact with the Historical Society down there over the book and other things, they may have some idea about the monuments.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. It's certainly worth following up, wouldn't it?
Yeah, the more I know, the more I can pass on.
Absolutely right.
And that's a, I mean, you know, we're talking olden days, back in those days. And just to think that you could walk along the coastline down around that area and drop your bags and say, right, we're building a house over there in the tea tree.
That's right. You couldn't imagine it today.
You can't do that.
That's right. You can't do it.
Those properties down there are worth lots of money.
Yes.
So that's about as much as I know of my past family.
Listen to Older Voices, where stories from the past find a home in the present.
Well, let's come back to John. Come back to you.
Right.
School. You obviously went to school at some stage. What age did you start school? At the normal age?
Or no.
Was the polio later, was it?
No. Having contracted polio, people were terrified of me. I was in and out of hospital up until the age of 7. I spent a lot of time down at Hampton Hospital. And then I went to school at the age of 7. And once again, I was, ostracised because of my polio. People were still paranoid.
There's
about
so much ignorance then, wasn't there?
Well, they didn't understand.
No,
they never understood. And I was forced to sit in a corner, in a special chair that they used to have to strap me in this chair. And parents would ring or phone up to school and say, I want my child taken out of John Steen's class.
Oh.
I hated school.
Oh, I can imagine.
I absolutely hated it because
that would have been awful for you.
Oh, well, like I said, it was horrific, and it, I mean, it still sticks in my mind.
Yeah.
And I mean, I did my best to become as normal as any other kid,
of course.
That I could never be normal. I can remember we were marching in a school march, and I had a school teacher scream at me and say, "Stop limping."
Oh, for goodness sake.
Stop limping. And see, at that stage, I had a 3.5-inch difference in the length of my leg. So I had a big boot and just a normal left leg. Later on, a few years later, they rectified that with a simple operation. And in fact, I should be 3.5 inches taller than I am now.
Right.
School, I just could not handle it. Being in hospital and isolated, being taken away from your parents and not being loved like a normal little boy would be. I mean, I'm talking about nurses that starched uniforms and things like that. There was a couple of nice nurses that actually took a liking to
me. Reached out to you as a person.
And actually, I was christened Frederick Steen. But the nurses didn't like Frederick, so everybody called me John. Now, and it stuck. I've actually taken the Frederick off my birth certificate now because it's too complicated when it comes to the establishment nowadays.
Yes.
But ever since I can remember, I was called John.
That's
so
exciting.
A couple of the nurses used to take me over to the boiler house at the Hamilton Hospital, and I'd have a look at the draft horses and have a look at the furnaces and things like that. And it was, I could remember those times, but there were other times when I was strapped just flat on my back, and the only thing I could do was move my arms.
That's just, I mean, I think I'm probably saying something very obvious, but I have a need to. That would have been not just upsetting, it must have been just so highly distressing for you with the reactions you're getting from people and the fact that you've got no control over it.
Oh, well, I really can't describe the pain.
No.
The embarrassment. Because back in those days, they used to force you to participate in everything, and I can never forget having calipers. You know that movie Forrest Gump?
Mm-hmm.
I was like a Forrest Gump with calipers, and we had the school sports one year, and I must have been about 9 or 10, and they made me line up with the rest of the kids, and I didn't even have a show. And the embarrassment with the grandstand full of parents and people and I mean, naturally, I was last.
Yeah. Look, I mean, there's nothing anybody can say to make up for that period now. All we can hope is that kids today that might be in a similar situation don't face those sort of uninformed, terrible responses. I mean, you would have liked to have thought that at least educated people like teachers and that would have been a bit more informed, but obviously wasn't the case.
No. I mean, we're talking 50-odd years ago.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was just reading in the Polio magazine, there's one lady has been in an iron lung for 45 years.
There's always somebody worse off, isn't there?
Yeah, most certainly is. I mean, I've coped. It's been difficult, but I've coped, and of course polio's left me with a legacy with a very bad right leg that has to be amputated at some stage, and I'm due to go into hospital to have a knee replacement on my good leg because it's carried me all those
years.
That's
right, it has to compensate.
I'm 57 this year. So let's say that leg has more or less done 100 years worth of work.
That's right.
Yes, because I've always depended on it.
Of course.
I was working for Black & Decker in Chirnside Park there, and I was always on my feet. And I went to my boss one day and I said, look, I just can't stand any longer. Have you got something else for me? And they said, well, we really don't have anything else for you. So I retired and took my superannuation and everything, and then I started my wood turning business.
Well, okay, John, before we get to the wood turning business, I think we've really have covered your youth and your school probably more than you thought we were going to. It would have been a relief when you eventually left school. What was your first job?
Right. Now, you wouldn't believe this, is that I couldn't get a job anywhere. I could not get a job. And there was a friend of the family who he was a local builder, and he owned a boat building business. And he said to me, you're fit and strong, Johnny. He said, why don't you come on as an apprentice builder?
Do join John and myself next week for part two of his story, which includes his apprenticeship, his going to Perth to work in the building industry, his buying of a 34-foot cray boat, his adventures sailing to Sydney, and his getting married, and much, much more next week on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Wesley Mission Victoria. The program is funded from the Commonwealth and State Government's Home and Community Care Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.